This is Tamiko, your host for Therapy Entrepreneurs and Leaders of Color, a podcast dedicated to showcasing therapy entrepreneurs and leaders of color around the world and supporting them in their roles. Today, our guest is Delvin Champagne. Delvin and his wife, Tasha, both licensed occupational therapy practitioners, are co-owners of Beltway Rehab Pros, LLC, a multi-dynamic healthcare organization that provides rehabilitation healthcare services utilizing a wide range of clinical strategies throughout the D.C., Maryland, and Virginia area. He currently serves as the District of Columbia representative to the American Occupational Therapy Association. He's an active member of Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity, founding the biannual health screening program. Most recently, he was elected to serve on the executive board of the Harvard Black Alumni Society of DC as communications and marketing chair. Delvin and his wife reside in Landover Hills, Maryland, and attend Greater Mount Calvary Holy Church in DC. He is family oriented and active in the lives of his younger brother and sister, Corey and Natalie. Is that how I pronounce it, Delvin? Natalie. Right. Okay, welcome. That's just a brief bio, everyone, because Delvin does everything, and I mean everything. So as we get into the interview, you'll hear more about his entrepreneurial and leadership roles and endeavors. So welcome, Delvin.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And, you know, that's an old bio. I got it updated. You know, some of it is somewhat outdated, but it's pretty accurate, you know.
Yeah, when you do a lot of things, it's hard to keep up with everything that you're doing, recording it. I can definitely relate. And I know that I know you do a whole lot more than what I just read. So welcome and thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So I read a brief bio, but catch us up. You said that was old. Catch us up on how you like, how you got into OT and what you're doing now.
Yeah. So I was, you know, I still have my paper from high school. It was in when I was in Atlanta, and so back in '94. Oh God, when I was in high school. My senior paper was on my profession. It's going to be it was physical therapy. I got it right here in this drawer. I got it to this day. It's my profession, physical therapy. So I was on this journey for a long time, and so when I was an undergrad, I was at the Norfolk State University in Virginia, and I was majoring in exercise science. And I was majoring in exercise science and health promotion. And so that prepared me for going into the therapy fields. And so when I finished undergrad in 2002, I worked for it for a few years before I went on college. And so when I graduated in 2002, I was trying to decide on what, you know, I was going to do. I was going to go to graduate school, I was going to work. And so I was working for rehab care. I graduated in December 2002. And so I was working through the spring at rehab care in Norfolk, Virginia. And trying to figure it out. Was I going to apply to graduate school for the fall? OT, PT, trying to figure it out. And so while working at rehab care, I was able to receive a scholarship for the local OTA program. It was free tuition. And so at the time, they don't have these programs anymore, but the programs were, some programs, they phased them out, but they still had a few left in around the country. OTA certificate program. I was the last class of the OTA certificate program. If you came in with your bachelor's degree or prerequisite, you just took the core courses for OT. So it was a 1 year full-time program. It was intense from May through, you know, you class all summer, like four classes in the summer, all your phys did, your peds. And then you do, you know, in the fall, you do like your media, your groups, your psych, and then you do like level one, and then you do two level eights in the spring. You do all full time in the spring. That's, you know, OTA program was crazy. I was able to do that program, and so that was awesome. So it's free tuition. So at the time, so that was great. I you know, worked for a while in Virginia, and I always wanted to go to graduate school, but I didn't, instead of going to, for school for occupational therapy, I wanted to, or master's at the time, it was going over, it was changing to master's that fall in 2003. So it was going over to master's that year, that same year I was doing my OTA program. And so I said, you know, I didn't want to go on to OT school because I'm doing OT now. I want to mix up my skill and diversify my skill set. And so I went to Howard University. I love Howard University. And I was there for public health policy, health education, public health policy. The graduate program, and so that's how I got to DC, and so I stopped there for you. I could ask some more questions. Okay. That's kind of how I got into OT and my initial way I got into it.
Okay, well, you said originally you had written in 94 you were going to go into PT, right?
Yeah, that was.
Where did that shift happen? Was it when you were doing that?
When I was doing my working at rehab care as a tech, and so. Was an outpatient. And so it was a guy who was a hand therapist, Corey. And so he and Corey and Glenda was a PT, but those like were kind of like some of my mentors. He was a hand therapist working in hands. He was OT. And so they kind of pushed me, you know, to kind of went to me that, you know, that there was some different programs. I looked at both programs, those PTA, it was OTA. I wasn't ready to move out of town and really just, I didn't have mentorship like I needed to at the time. That's why mentorship is very important. You know, you got to have people to guide you on the right path. So, I just took a chance on this. I said, you know, it's 1 year, so, you know, I can do this. You know, I've got a bachelor's degree in exercise science. I can do this. But it wasn't that easy as I thought it was. But, but I made it through. And so I kind of like had some guidance when I was a tech at Rehab Care. So that really helped me a lot. But that's why mentorship is critically important, to have mentors to help you guide yourself on the right path. And so.
Very true. Very true. And speaking of mentors, I know you are involved in the Brothers organization. Can you talk a little bit about your role? And for listeners who might not be familiar with it, can you tell us about it?
Shout out Dr. Covington and all the brothers on the steering committee.
Dr. Covington.
The Brothers, it stands for Black Male, hyphenated, Black Male Registered Occupational Therapy Healthcare Professionals, hyphenated, Assistants and Students. So Brothers, Black Male Registered Occupational Therapy Healthcare Professionals, Assistants and Students. So that's really important to have all this, you know, so it's a long acronym. We stand for Brothers. And originally Brothers came about, it was many years before, decades before, they kind of got together, kind of like some brothers, it was kind of meeting together, but it wasn't ever really formalized. And so, but in 2019, we had the iconic picture on our page where we came together in New Orleans at AOTA for the first brothers meeting. But 20 or 30 brothers came together, Black male doing the NBC, the MBOTC meeting. And so got kicked it off, but this is pre-COVID. So this is pre-virtual. So we didn't, you know, so communication wasn't a thing. Like that virtual thing wasn't really a thing then. You know, you could do Skype, but it wasn't really hype like it is now. And so it kind of like fell through the crack. We didn't really follow through with the organization that we needed to. But then in 2020, when George Floyd hit, that kind of like sparked some interest in reigniting that vision. And so COTAD had a forum, and right after George Floyd, in like June or July of 2020, right in the middle of pandemic, and they had a Black male impact on OT panel, which really sparked the activation of Brothers that started, you know, that year before. We didn't really get it going, but now it was COVID. We had virtual, we had Zoom. It was so we can, you know, so after that COTAD meeting, it kind of sparked interest of getting Brothers up and running again. And so that's what, you know, we came together, we were meeting, we have a steering committee, it's 9 brothers, OTA and OTAs. We've been doing great work. We had about 10 sessions at different universities across the nation, Zoom live session with different groups, diversity groups, COTAD groups, EMDI groups. It's been good. Brothers, it's been a powerful impact on promoting, you know, like less than 1% of Black male registered in OTA students. And so, and practitioners.
Yeah, it's good work. I follow it. I try to jump in when I can. You know, I am doing a lot of different things as well, but I definitely follow and am so appreciative of what you all are doing with brothers. And so you said less than 1%. Let's talk about that. Less than 1% of the profession are Black males. How has that impacted you as a Black male OT practitioner in our profession?
It's living here in Washington in a metropolitan area, you see, not the image you want to be, but you see more than the average nationwide because you're in DC and a lot of lots of diversity. So you see a lot of different diversity in profession here in the Beltway, DMV Beltway area. But once you leave a metropolitan area, you're like in Atlanta or like Houston or South Florida or you're in New York, you can see more diversity. But if you get Midwest of, four of the rural areas, it's like none. And so that's why it's important to, because I'm working in a facility in skilled nursing here in DC where 95% of the population is African American, and half of the residents are a man. So think about that. So you have, the AOTS Center Vision. You have to, meet society's occupational needs. You have to be wherever, you have to treat patients where they are. You have to be a representative. My favorite. When we did OT, when I was in school and we did theory and so forth and MOHO and so forth, all those different courses, the whole idea of the therapeutic use of self. And so that whole model was everything for me. So I always talk about that. That's theory, but it's real. When we in practice, I just go into a room and it's, hey, I'm Delvin, I just be myself, I just be real, And so right. I just use myself as therapy. And so it really works. That's a real thing.
It really works.
So I just be who I am. And so, and that really, when you have to get in OT, we do what's called participation. You have to be able to participate in therapy to make progress and to have a good outcome. And so you have to, and clients know when it's authentic patient care. And so when you can do that, you can have good impact on outcomes and patient prognosis. And so, and have a good functional outcomes. And so that's what we do in OT. And so that's what my life. And so just being me, and using myself as therapy. And so, I've working in DC, in urban DC, and then I've also worked in Upper Northwest or Bethesda, where it's highly affluent. And so, sometimes, you don't feel the love doing certain parts of the city, but you have to be able to adapt and provide care, across the board. And so, it's just that you don't have the same kind of, I try to do it, but it may be different because of cultural differences, a different reason why it may not be the same kind of outcomes. But, so brothers is important because you have to have representation to serve the population that you serve. That makes sense. You have to have people who represent of the same demographic who can break down the barriers of treatment so you can have good outcomes. So it's all about the patient outcomes. So, yeah.
Yeah, you said a word there. Words, Delvin. You got to be able to adapt. And the importance of diversity in order to have positive outcomes.
Right.
You can relate and be authentic. And then you said some places you go, you might not feel the love. What do you mean?
I feel the love. But you still got to provide the service.
Yeah. Yeah. Not everybody is welcoming of diversity in certain places, but you still have to adapt and provide the service. Mm-hmm. Agree 100%. I want to switch gears just a little bit and talk about, you have this gift that I'm noticing in terms of being able to network, bring people together and put on these amazing conferences virtually. Can you talk about, so we had the National Black OT Caucus's inaugural event in February, which I saw some of it. I So impressed. I was so sad.
Videos coming out this week. So you haven't seen the whole thing yet?
The video is in queue. Because you know I was sad when you messaged and you were like, February 19th. I was like, that's my son's 13th birthday. And I'm like, I'm going to be present with him the entire day. And I didn't want to not keep my word on that because I can be a workaholic at times. So I knew like I'd already planned from sun up to sundown. We had stuff to do. But I saw that you were doing that and like how instrumental you were in making it happen. As well as there's another event that I just saw on LinkedIn that you're putting together. That's a gift to be able to. And you introduced me to people.
So the thing about it is that, you know, I give it back to, you know, a couple of different things. You know, one is in my fraternity too, Kappa Alpha Psi. Shout out Kappa Alpha Psi, your baby, yo. I've been doing this, you know, since I was in grad school at Howard. When I was doing public health program at Howard University, I was the chair of our, like you read in the bio, I was the chair of our conference, of our health fair, of our fraternity. And so it was a part of my program to do these screenings. So I chaired this. A part of my graduate work was to do this health screening where it was this data of like African-American community, chronic disease. And so that kind of where it started, doing like event planning. And so this has been since 2007. And so I've been kind of like doing these events. We did the big conference for our national conference. And we did like many regional conferences. So I've been doing the kind of event planning. And so it kind of kept going. When I was the RA, I'm not RA anymore. I'm on the DC board as the chair of advocacy. And so we was doing these events. And so, you know, if I just felt like if I don't push forward on an event, it's not gonna get done. And so it really, moving fast forward, we started doing the event at DCOTA where we did meet the council because in DC we're a city, so we're not a state, so we don't have legislatures, but we have the city council. So we did the first event was in 2012. We did meet the council. I said we got to go advocate for OT at the city council in DC at the Wilson Building. So we organized meet the council, and so we had to go take the whole DCOTA board and the licensure board reps and got vendors, and we had to go do meet the council. It was awesome. And so I said, you know what? We got to do, because if we don't do, we're not going to be known. And then so some other events, you know, small events throughout the year. And then moving forward to 2017, it was the OT Centennial. And so I was like, we got to do a conference. And, you know, DCOTA haven't done a conference in decades. And so it was 2012, 13, 14, 15. No one's doing a conference. I said, you know what? It's the centennial, and we have to do a conference for DCOTA. And so I pushed forward with doing this conference in 2017. So I was the chair of the conference in D.C. And so I just naturally kind of like organically kind of started doing these events and doing these event planning. And so it was a passion that I had for doing these events. And so in 2017, we did the Centennial DCOTA Conference. It was awesome. We had posters, we did Polari sessions, we had food vendors. And we had like, you know, luncheons, keynote. Shout out to my mentor, Mrs. Barbara Kornblau, who was a past president of AOTA, was our keynote speaker. She's always my all things mentor. So we did the, you know, and ever since then, it really kicked off. And then, so I've been doing these events, you know, with DC, we do panels and, you know, with DCOTA. And then when we came into the virtual age, you can do anything now. Like, and so that just gave me a whole new platform of doing events. And so I can do an event, you know, pretty easily now. For my phone, just put together some folks and meet some people, bring people together. And my thing is that, you know, LinkedIn is a powerful resource. People don't know. If you know LinkedIn, you are really not.
Don't sleep on LinkedIn.
Do
not sleep on LinkedIn.
You know, doing very, very well with networking. So my thing is that I like to go and do searches for folks who have unique skill sets, unique credentials, and so, you know, bringing some people together and, you know, with different unique skills. And so, and regarding the National Black Caucus Conference, so I said, you know, the Black Caucus, we, you know, been around almost 50 years, it'd be 50 years in 2024. We had a big celebration in Orlando for the 50th anniversary. And so it's a big event we'll be happening for that. But we're the first, you know, organization that came out that created the MDI, which is the Multicultural Diversity Inclusion Network from ALTA. And so we always go to conference and we do a meeting and we don't celebrate fully as I thought we should. And so I said, we got to do something, you know. I've been pushing this dinner at conference for many years now, almost 2 years now. I'm saying we got to do a dinner at conference. And so we never did it. But now I said, since it's virtual, we have no excuse now. And so I pushed it along from last fall, and it was a great day. You know, we had like a PED session, adult session, advocacy, education, and it was a great day. And so folks really enjoyed themselves, and it was a free conference. And we, you know, opened up for donations, and we, you know, folks really contributed to the group. And so that was a blessing. And so, you know, as a contribution, that was good for our scholarship. Mm-hmm. But lastly, I wanted to say, coming up in OT month, we are doing the second annual Colonel William Lofton keynote address on the MLK Memorial, which is February 4th, which is the day MLK was assassinated. So we're doing it on that day in OT month. Colonel William Lofton, he was a 57 graduate of Wayne State University, African-American male, full colonel in the military, in the Army. He was the first African-American male fellow of AOTA, FAOTA, in 1982. And so we, God rest his soul, we want to do, we're doing our keynote through the brothers in address in honor of him. And so we have Minister Bobby Johnson, who's associate minister at a church in Richmond, Virginia, and he's director of rehab for VCU healthcare. So he's going to do an awesome keynote on February 4th. And also we are CHIRP. I want to talk about CHIRP. This is important. CHIRP. CHIRP stands for the Consortium of HBCU Interdisciplinary Rehab Programs. And so CHIRP is a program that brings together all of the HBCU OT programs, all six. Shout out to Howard University, Winston-Salem, Tuskegee, Alabama State, and Florida A&M, and Tennessee State. And so CHIRP event is going to bring together a panel of six representatives from all different universities who have public health background. And it's going to be a public health OT symposium. So yeah, so I'm just doing a lot of work, you know, it's virtual. So yep, I'll stop right there.
appreciate it. So all virtual, y'all heard what he said, and I'll put it in the show notes, and free. Like, what a blessing. You said it's a blessing to get the contributions. It's a blessing that you put these things together and you're not charging anyone for any of it. True service, altruistic service. So we appreciate it, Delvin. Can you share any last words of wisdom or advice that you want to give to our listeners, to our Black male practitioners and other people from underrepresented groups who are hearing about all these great things you're doing and they aspire to follow in your footsteps?
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I want to leave with folks, is what I'm doing. You know, I do all these different things, you know, volunteer, but like, I want to just share what I'm doing, and, you know, regarding my professional day job, what I do, you know, to pay bills. I am EEO, Equal Opportunity Employment. It's a big deal. No one knows about that. This fell in my lap a couple of years ago. ADA, the Rehab Act, Congressional Rehab Act. It's called Reasonable Accommodation. It's a beautiful thing. And so that's what I do now. Full-time, I work for the federal government. I'm a contractor for DHS, ICE. See, no one knows about that. This is a beautiful thing. And so you ever went to apply for a job at some facility or clinic and they ask you, do you have a disability? Mm-hmm. You ever seen that before? That's good, that disability. Mm-hmm. It's a big deal. Like, you know, in private industry, it may not be as, you know, the main focus of employing disabilities, but in federal government, it's a big deal. And so what I do is I work from home. Praise God for that. I do what we call reasonable accommodation coordinator or reasonable accommodation case management through EEO compliance. And so the EEOC is the Equal Opportunity Employment Commission, which regulates a workplace environment. Like if you have a anti-harassment, you know, sexual harassment, disputes, discriminatory abuse and so forth, conflict resolution between your job and, you know, with your employer and so forth. And also they monitor employees with disabilities, which is Section J of the MD-715, which is the annual data report. You know, like when you go for a job and say, do you have disability? Are you a male? Are you a woman? Are you a veteran? They collect data from EEOC to make sure that certain demographics of folks are, they want that data to show who's hiring who. So very important for the EEOC to show, you know, that's why, you know, diversifying your workforce is important for the government, so that you have a good working, you have a good work environment. And so, and also they want to track employees who have disabilities, which is important too. And so, I work from home and I work, my job is to individuals with disabilities who submit a case who need a reasonable accommodation on their job. And I provide research for assistive technology. Mm. It's managed and helps them find the appropriate accommodation for their, so they can do their work and be productive. So it's great. So I just say that, you know, look that up, you know, look for opportunities in assistive technology, reasonable accommodation. The opportunities are endless in those areas. And so, but yeah, I'd be happy to talk to anyone about it and share my expertise and my professional experience.
That would be great. I didn't know that's what you did. So I'm learning something new about you. I'm definitely interested in including that also in the show notes. And I just echo what Dylan said, that opportunities are endless in occupational therapy. There are so many, it's so broad. And sometimes we think strictly traditional, like you got to work in a hospital, you got to work in a nursing home, and there's nothing wrong with working in those places. We need OT practitioners in those places too, but we also need them in some of these spaces where we historically have not been in. And maybe we started out in the beginning of the profession in those areas, and then over the years we went more to the medical model, but we can be in all of those places. And so thank you for sharing that unique job description, that, you know, what you're doing with helping people with disabilities to have their accommodations that they have a right to. And so that is our show for today. I have thoroughly enjoyed getting to know you a little bit better, Delvin. I will always keep up with you on social media. And like you said, LinkedIn, don't sleep on LinkedIn. I'm telling you,
LinkedIn is where I'm at.
It's so many people I've met. I've gotten big contracts from networking on LinkedIn. Instagram is nice. You can put your nice pictures up there, and Facebook is nice too, but LinkedIn is the largest social media platform for professionals.
Yeah, so if you're looking for
professional networking,
yep,
go to LinkedIn and you find Delvin up there. He's going to introduce you to some people, because I've got some friends like, I've never met Maude. I love
Maude. Maude is awesome.
We're going to go dancing. Hey Maude, if you're listening, we're going to go dancing.
Yeah, Maude is awesome.
Yeah, she is. Thank you for that introduction. And someone else you introduced me to, so I appreciate those introductions. And if you get on LinkedIn, connect with Delvin. See what he's up to. I'm sure you're going to benefit. We benefit from each other, learning from each other, supporting each other, and celebrating each other. That's what it is all about. So that is our show for today. Don't forget to follow. Thank you, Delvin.
Yep. And thank you so much for having me. Talk to you guys soon.
You're welcome. Till next time.
Goodbye.